Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, I think we've decanted for long enough. It's time to sit back and enjoy Two Sharp Reds with Mark Schwarzer and Ollie Giel.
Yes, welcome to another episode of the Two Sharp Reds, where myself, Ollie Giel, and Mark Schwarzer like to try a different glass of red wine. And then towards the end of the episode, we'll compare that wine to a player, past or present, and mark a really special edition of Two Sharp Reds today because it's, of course, Gravy Day. You, of course, I assume know what Gravy Day is?
I have absolutely zero idea what Gravy Day is.
Do you not know? Do you not know? It's the 21st of December. Of course, the great Paul Kelly wrote in his song, How to Make Gravy. He wrote his letter about how to make gravy on the 21st of December. So it's Gravy Day.
All right, next.
Okay, well, I'm trying a Barolo, a nice red from the Roma region. So stretching out to my Italian reds today. Should be very, very nice. Normally prefer to be matching it with a nice rack of lamb, but I'm having that for dinner. So I'm going to have some of it now and then, you know, play it on its merits and then for dinner, match it with the lamb. So what have you gone for?
I like that, mate. I like how you're stretching your bottle of wine out. Correct. It doesn't normally last that long in my
household. I'm learning. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm going for a Cloudy Bay Pinot Noir.
Ooh, Cloudy
2018.
Bay.
Going back to my favorite wine, the Pinot Noir, New Zealand Cloudy Bay. What a wine that is. I tell you what, love it. So yeah. It's not going to last very long, mate. So I'm going to have it just at one serving. It's so good and really looking forward to it.
Very good stuff there, Mark. I'm sure we'll talk about lots about the red wine. There's a few questions I need to ask you about the current situation with Socceroos and the goalkeeping situation there. There's lots to talk about. But before we do that, we do have a very special guest. And it's now your time to shine, Mark, as you do your famous intros.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know about famous. Infamous.
Infamous. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, so, well, anyway, this is, listen, great honour again, as it is most weeks whenever we have a guest on, absolutely brilliant fun. And this is a guy that I watched him develop as a young kid, to be fair. And I said to him as he came on the show today, he doesn't look like he's changed very much. He says he does feel different, but he doesn't look that different. Still got a baby face. And a baby face when he came onto the scene as a young 16-year-old or so, when he sort of showed his face at the training ground. Still one of the best left foots I've seen, I have to say. To absolutely terrorize people up that left-hand side of the pitch and is an absolute legend at Middlesbrough. Made a couple of different appearances at different times at Middlesbrough. So he's definitely a through-and-through Middlesbrough born and bred and very passionate about the club and was playing there, you know, very pivotal moments of the club's history and in the most successful periods of the club's history. So love to introduce now then Stuart Downing, left winger, attacking midfielder, and young kid who's not a young kid anymore. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff.
Did you stumble there, Mark? I think you stumbled on the intro again.
A little bit, yeah, because I was going to say something else and I changed my mind. So
he gets so nervous. I'm so sorry about that, Stuart, but every time...
I wouldn't even say it's nervous. I reckon I get excited.
Sure.
Yeah, that's more than anything. I get excited. Nervous I don't get that often. It's more more getting overexcited and trying to control my feelings, my emotions in that regard. Anyway, Stewie, wow. I was looking at the other day, the stats. You played, was it over 400 games for Middlesbrough? Two stints?
Yep.
You were born and bred in Middlesbrough. So yes. I want to know, it's hard for me to understand, and I'm sure with Ollie as well, is that in Australia, we grew up and we have clubs that we support, whether it's other football teams, rugby, AFL, which is, you know, it's pretty fanatical, but it's still not quite like it is in Europe with football clubs. Yeah. What's it like to play for your home team?
Unbelievable, really. Unbelievable. I mean, even when I got into the first team, was it 18, 19, so I was literally still a fan. So a couple of years before that, like you say, when you were playing, I was a ball boy. And then, like I say, within 2 or 3 years, I'd gone from that to full-time professional and then into the first team. So it was a little bit, you know, crazy, really. Like, I couldn't believe sort of my luck getting in, because like all fans, me, my dad, and my whole family are all Middlesbrough fans. And, you know, I've sat on the halfway line for many, many years watching, you know, Middlesbrough with our season tickets. So crazy, but, you know, absolute dream come true for me.
When you're that kid, right, so you go from, obviously, the dreams are you want to one day play for your home team,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But when was the realisation that this is actually a strong possibility this may happen?
I think probably when Steve McLaren took over. I think he had a meeting with us in the U team and he said, I've watched his play the last couple of weeks. I always remember the meeting came and he said, and there'll be 2 or 3 U's that will play by the end of this season if you keep playing the way you are progressing. On the quiet, it was Mark Proctor actually who said to us that he was looking at me and David Murphy, very close. We all of a sudden went from youth team to into the reserve dressing rooms, and we were, I don't know if you remember, I was travelling to a lot of first team games without playing to gain experience, just to see how you lads prepare, et cetera, et cetera. And I always remember Steve McCann actually said to me, watch Mendieta, watch how he, you know, he eats, how he trains, how he conducts himself, his movement off the ball, because Mendy wasn't a very quick player, but he was very clever, wasn't he? And so I had literally a year of travelling, just picking things up, really. And yeah, so we progressed quite quick. And then by the end of that season, I think about 4 or 5 games before the end of the season, we played Ipswich away. We were pretty comfortable in the league. And he put me in, which I wasn't expecting to play, to be honest, on the day. But he kept the team until an hour before kickoff.
I do remember that game, actually. I really do remember that time when you made your debut in the team. Yeah, I mean, Steve McLaren came in and changed everything dramatically at the club. And huge difference. And it wasn't long. I mean, you went out on loan to Sunderland.
Yes.
I mean, did you get stick for that?
No, I didn't actually. I mean, I look back at it now and people said to me, well, that's not a bad thing to do, but to go to your local rivals, I think, obviously, they were in the Championship and they weren't on the same level as Middlesbrough at the time. And a lot of the clubs that wanted me on loan were down, like QPR, I think, down in London. I was only 17, really 18, and I was quite young. And, you know, I wanted to stay quite local. And I met Mick McCarthy once at reserve game. And he said, I'd love to take you. And that's how it came about, really. He watched a couple of games and he said, you know, I need a left-sided player. And then I spoke to Steve McCann and he wasn't really big on me going there. I don't know why, but he was like, no, I think you should go. I think Chesterfield were 1 in League 2. And I was like, well, I'm not really going to learn in that league. It'd probably be difficult for me, because you remember, I was 17, I wasn't physically, you know, developed. You know, the kit was literally swinging off me, wasn't it, when I played? And I didn't think it'd be right for me to play in that league. Physically, I would have probably got lost. And I just thought the Championship was more better football. The Sunderland were a good team. And in the end, he let me go for a month, and I think a month and a half. And then obviously, he called me back. I would have loved to have stayed, actually, till the end of the season, just because I was playing and, you know, reserve team football and like I say, no crowd, and I'd gone from that to like 30,000 at the Stadium of Light, and I'd loved it, and I just wanted to stay, but injuries called me back.
If there's one thing that I can relate to, it is being a fan. So then from your perspective then, so you said that, you know, when you start with Middlesbrough, it took a while to kind of, you know, become more of the, you know, the player rather than the fan. So was it weird putting on a Sunderland shirt? And 2 years before that, I'm sure if someone said to you, oh yeah, here, wear this, you go, oh no, thank you. no, not for me at all.
Yeah, if you'd have asked me that at 14, 15, there'd have been no chance I'd go on to Sunderland. That wouldn't happen. But I just think at the time and being close to home, because I was a bit of a homeboy when I was younger, because they're down the road and it was a good team, basically. And there were better teams than the other loans, and it just worked out perfect for me, really. And like I said, I was only there a month and a half, I think, and then I came back. But it was great for me because it gave me confidence to go and play in a men's league, really. In front of crowds that I hadn't really done before, because I was playing in reserves in front of a couple of hundred people. So it gave me a lot of confidence, because, you know, I was quite young and shy at that time, and it brought me out of my shell a little bit.
And that was your string ball, wasn't it? Because you went there, you played that month and a bit, and you came back, and then you became a regular pretty much from that point onwards at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
So it was a huge part of your development, and that spring ball that got you into the side. Yeah. 2004 League Cup final. What were your memories of that? I mean, I know you didn't play. You were involved in the squad on that day. That must have been tough as well, because you played a lot of games leading up to it.
Yeah.
What was the reasoning? Did Steve McLaren give you a talking to? Did he pull you aside? Or was it one of those ones you just found out and that was it?
I think because if I look at it now, I think I would have probably, you know, given him a bit of stick back because I was only young and I had to thought, you know, don't be cheeky about it and you want to stay in the manager's plans. I sort of accepted it. But there was a game before that we played Newcastle away, if you remember. I think we lost 2-1.
Right.
And I'd played leading up into that game and then he pulled me in and said, I think it was me and Chris Rigger at the time, he left us out and said, I want to go with experience. We need a win. And I could, if I look at it now, I could see what he was doing. He was literally playing that team that was going to play in the cup final. But I still in my mind thought, oh, I've still got a chance of playing the cup final, and et cetera, et cetera. But I knew looking back now that he planned that. And I was, you know, I wasn't really disappointed. I think I'd come back off loan. I was still a young boy trying to learn my way. And I was on the bench in the cup final. And I look at some of the lads like Colin Cooper and people like that who played nearly every round, I think, and then got left out. So I was lucky in that sense. But looking at it now, I think I would have said, well, you know, I deserve to play because I was playing in the team. I was doing well. And obviously he was trying to fit Bolo into the team as well, and he went for him over experience. Really, that was the only answer he gave me. It was experience.
Well, he did get man of the match in the end, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he did all right, didn't he? But for a good decision. But I think, like you said, I wasn't overly disappointed. I was thinking, I'm 19 year old. I'm on the bench in the cup final, and like I said, I'm a Middlesbrough fan and all this. And I just, the day was unbelievable. I mean, I celebrated like I'd played 90 minutes. It was looking back, I think I was at the front with the trophy and everything, and I didn't even kick a ball, but. It was an unbelievable day, wasn't it? It was great, great celebration. Like saying the parade and stuff we did after was unbelievable.
How did it compare? How does it compare from like winning, being part of the squad that won the League Cup final?
Yeah,
and you know you played a big part leading up to it, and then promotion. Yeah. So, were they on a par? I know they're very different, but are they on a par in terms of the way it's received, the way you celebrate it, and did you have a similar feeling?
I had a bit of a strange feeling when we got promoted with. Do you mean the Aitor Karanka side?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I had a bit of a nightmare a few months with him. Obviously, we'd had a fallout and stuff.
We'll talk about that. Don't go on that. We'll talk about
that. Sorry. So
no, you can. You can go. Talk about it, mate. That's fine. Yeah, go.
I had a bit of a... I was so angry because he dropped me for that last game against Brighton and I played leading up to that all the games. And I don't know if he wanted to make a statement or whatever he was doing, but... we had to win the game and I thought, you know, I deserve to play, which we generally do, don't we? We always think we should be in the team, but he left me out and he put me on the last half an hour and I was so angry. I mean, and I couldn't get out even at full time. I was trying to celebrate and I was so angry, but you have to put it aside because you get promoted and then it's over. But I knew there was problems leading up and there was going to be problems after that. And whereas the cup final was more, I was still a fan and it was an unbelievable day. All my family, all the friends went and the parade. So I think looking back, it was probably the 2004 because that set us on that run, didn't it, of Europe and we knew what was coming and we just found a bit of a wave, weren't we? Bit of a crest of a wave and it was unbelievable.
Yeah, you talk about Europe. I mean, that was some experience, wasn't it? I mean, that's
unbelievable.
An incredible accomplishment and you look back now as a, obviously as a Middlesbrough fan and a player that's played for Middlesbrough and grew up in the area. I mean, and I look back at it as a player of thinking it's, you know, some of the proudest moments of my career and most enjoyable moments. And
yeah,
to think that a club like Middlesbrough to accomplish what we did, I think it was underestimated at the time. And it's only now that you kind of appreciate it. So go through that running. I mean, you remember the first game we played in Europe?
In Europe, was it, I'm trying to think of that team.
It was away in the Czech Republic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was James Morrison's goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That one. Yeah, I can't remember the team.
Was it Banik Ostrava?
Sorry?
Banik Ostrava?
Was it Banik? Yeah, I think it was Banik Ostrava. I think you're right.
I think the thing that struck me about Europe was the atmospheres, wasn't it? It was they were fanatical, crazy. Like you said, playing the Czech Republic, and then we went to Bucharest, and it was just like, this is crazy. Because the Premier League wasn't like that. They weren't as hostile. Well, and that's the thing that struck me. It was very, very hostile wherever we played. Playing in Rome and places like that, it was like unbelievable. Like you said, we take it for granted? And you look at it now as, you know, obviously the club's, you know, now in the Championship. But if you look at that, we had a really good team, really good squad. And we played in Europe, like you say, every couple of weeks against big teams and beating them and doing really well. So you look about it, it was unbelievable memories really for a team. Like you said, Middlesbrough is not massive. It's not a big area. And how we did it was unbelievable.
What was it like as a kid, as a local? During that period of time, I mean, it must have been amazing. And I lived out of town, so I lived like an hour down the road. What was it like day to day, walking down the street, doing your things, you know, family and friends, everyone's a Middlesbrough fan?
It was unbelievable. It just brought, there was like a good atmosphere, a good, you know, people on the pubs were packed and you're lucky, like you said, match days and European nights that were packed and all your family and friends are can't wait for next week. They weren't even bothered about the Premier League game on the Saturday. It was like, can't wait for Wednesday night. We're playing Roma home and stuff like that. It's dreams, really, isn't it? It's unbelievable. I remember when we got to the final on that Thursday night, when we got through, we all went out into town. Me, Mozza, Maka, all the young pups. And we're in the nightclub and just celebrating with fans, really. We're in the mix of it all with our suits on and just having beers and celebrating. It was unbelievable, really. You probably wanted to do that now, would you? But looking back, it was like crazy, really.
How do you sum up your relationship with Borough fans? Because, I mean, the only real relationship I've ever had with the club is when, obviously, when Mark played there, and as a, you know, Socceroos fan, you kind of keep in touch where all the national you know, players are. But when we had Janino on the podcast, I distinctly remember how passionate all the Borough fans were online. And like, I was blown away. And we've had some, you know, we talk about a lot of, you know, cool, you know, big teams, but I just was blown away. There was something special about them, I felt.
It was, I mean, like Junior was loved when he swore to about me, but like, he was the number one, really. He I don't think he ever had a bad game in a Borough shirt in her eyes. He was just, he was God, you know what I mean? He was, which obviously he was a fantastic player. He was an unbelievable player, really. So they loved him. They had a sort of affection with him and, you know, the way he was as a lad and stuff like that. And he was only little and the way he played, he was exciting. And I think they took to him, you know, in that, especially in that era, there was a buzz around the town. Like I say, there was a buzz when he signed for us. All the big name players come, but he was the number one. He probably still is now as well.
Oh, he absolutely is. There's no doubt about it. They loved him. Favorite game in that European run? I think I know what it is.
In any game in the two over the two seasons, you mean?
Yeah, well, that really the one we got to the final. So
the Bucharest has to be Bucharest, doesn't it? I think. We were 2-0 down when we were in the game, 3-0 on aggregate. We were so out of it. It was unbelievable, wasn't it? They were good, really. They were a good team. And I actually thought, if we get a draw out of this game, we've actually, you know, got a bit of respect out of it and a bit of, I don't know, give the fans something to cheer about. But the way we did it and how we did it was so unlike McLaren as well, because we were quite, not defensive, but we were solid, weren't we, under him, 4-5-1, 4-4-2. And in the end, we had like six strikers on, didn't we, I think?
I think it was four. He had four out-and-out strikers on. You had three assists, and Massimo pops up again for the winner for like the second round in a row.
He was our European man, wasn't he, Massimo? I was chuffed for him because he had a bit of a tough spell, didn't he? He was on loan and he wasn't getting on with the manager, and he come for the big price tag. And I just thought, you know, like him now, he's probably number two on the list. They love him.
Yeah.
Massimo didn't play a lot of games, but when he did, he got us in the final, didn't he? And got a couple of the winners. So I was pleased for him because he was only a young lad, wasn't he? And he had a bit of a tough time, and you know, fair play to him.
You know, and it's funny, of all people, you wouldn't have expected, because he wasn't the most professional at times, right? Loved a bit of a party as well.
Yeah.
You're not playing to like 38, 39 years old, still playing in Serie A, scoring goals, which is just incredible.
He must have cut them cigarettes out or something, wasn't he?
I know, you're not wrong. Final. So I've got to talk about the final, even though I need to talk about briefly, because 4-0, yeah. I still to this day, 4-0 is not a fair reflection of the game, is it?
No. I think there was big moments on that. I think we had a penalty shout 1-0, if I'm right. Big for Dukes had a volley saved, didn't he? I think
on the line of the keeper's leg.
And I think if that goes in, I think like we probably get that momentum of like, here we go again, we're going to win. I think that was our attitude, wasn't it? It didn't matter who we play, we'll just beat you, we'll just turn up, and we've got strikers who can score, and we were quite solid at the back. And I think you have to say they were a really, really good team, and they've gone on to, them players in that team have gone on to have amazing careers, Danny Alves, people like that. But it was never a 4-0 game. I think obviously we had to attack at the end and try and get the win, and that's when they probably picked us apart. But overall, like I say, it could have easily swung the other way, and we could have won 2-1. So it was a great game on it. I mean, obviously we lost in the end, but I think to get the final anyway was an achievement. But just disappointing the way we ended, really, in the result.
How tough was it for you then? You know, talked about before, fan, local lad, and then being at the club, you get relegated. Yeah. And you end up leaving the club and moving on. How big a decision was that?
It was, because I think 6 months before that, I'd had a conversation in the January that Tottenham were trying to buy me. But the summer before that January, I'd said to Steve Gibson, I'm going to strengthen the team. And it hadn't gone well, and some of the buyers are coming, hadn't settled. And you could see it coming, really. See it coming. Like I said, we bought Mido and people like that. And it just didn't work out, I didn't think. And the team was slipping, and we went on a massive run of not winning games, which obviously doesn't help. And I could see it sapping away. And I had a choice to make really in January. And I said to the chairman, well, you know, I'll stay till the end of the season. I'll give it a go and try and keep us in the league. But I could, back in my mind, I thought, you know, we're going to be in trouble here. We didn't have enough quality, I didn't think, and it proved because we got relegated. But then I broke my foot, didn't I, on the last game of the season. So I thought, oh, well, that's out the window. I'm here for another season at least, because I wasn't fit until the December, I think.
That's right.
But then I was on holiday. I always remember this, and I think it was Keith Lamb who rang me at the time and said, oh, listen, we've had a bid from Aston Villa out the blue. Matt O'Neill said he wants you to go down and do a medical. I said, well, I'm not sure this is going to work because I've got a boot on, I've got a pin in my foot. And I said, no, it's fine. You just go for talks. And to be fair to Matt, and he said, the chairman doesn't want to sign you because he's going to pay you for 6 months and you're no good to us. But I've told him that I want you here. So he got me in the building, really. He pushed it over the line. And like I say, but and it was the right time to leave, I think, because been there a long time. To finish on a relegation was obviously not ideal, what I wanted. But, you know, it was time to go. It was time for a change, and I needed that, I think.
And you were his first signing, weren't you?
Yeah, that summer, I think I was, yeah.
What sort of confidence does that give a player? That must be a huge feeling.
Yeah. Well, I've always been a confidence player, really, but I always remember a conversation I had with him on the training ground, and I said to him, obviously, this is quite a serious injury, and I was worried, would I come back the same player and stuff like that. And he said to me, I've got absolutely no doubts when you come back. You'll be even better than you were before. He was that type of manager, real man manager, give everyone confidence, a bit old school manager, but I loved him. I absolutely loved him. He was great for me. He was giving me so much confidence. And when I came back, he said, you know, you don't have to rush back. You can take your time. You know, you don't need to impress me. I know what you can do as a player. You just come and do what you did at Middlesbrough. And that was enough for me. I mean, I worked so hard to get fit because I was so desperate to do well for him because he put his neck on the line, really, and paid a lot of money to get me there when I was injured.
So would you have stayed, you reckon, at Villa longer had he still been manager?
Yeah, I think so. It's an hard one because he probably would have probably fought harder for me to stay because he was like that. He didn't like players leaving him. Remember, yeah. Gareth Barry had a tough time getting out with him. But we were a really good team. And at the time, we were probably ahead of Liverpool at that point when they wanted me, if he'd have stayed. But I think the Villa in that last season was slipping. We'd had a relegation fight under Gerard Houllier. You could just see there was sense, there was a bit of change. And like I said, Liverpool came for me and I wanted to go, really. But I think if Martin was there, I would have had a difficult choice to make. But it was pretty easy because I wanted to leave at that point, yeah.
With the so Villa, you look at Villa right now. I mean, it's a club that's obviously just got promoted back into the Premier League, the season before last, stayed up last season, controversially to some, because of the, you know, the goal line technology wasn't working. Someone had forgotten to turn the switch on. You know, what's your thoughts on them right now as a club and where they're headed?
I quite like the manager. I think he was a good appointment. I think he's done an amazing job there. I hear, you know, lads. So he's a really good coach and stuff like that. And I think the bit of a sleeping giant, I think, but it was an amazing club when I was there. I couldn't believe the fan base and the club. And like I said, we were in the top six most seasons, which is a good achievement. But I always thought he could go to the Champions League. He had that. He had the crowd and stuff like that. You said the club size, the manager, Martin O'Neill, could do that expectation. So, and it started to drift a little bit, didn't it, before, for a couple of seasons. But I think potentially if they get a good backing, and he gets the right players, I think they could push right up the league.
Are you a big fan of Jack Grealish?
Yeah, I like him. Very, very good. I remember him as a kid when I was there. Obviously, I didn't know he was going to be as good as he is, but I always remember they used to talk about this kid, Jack Grealish, and I'd seen a few clips to him as a kid, and he was ahead of it then as well, really, for his age group. He was miles ahead.
He didn't train with you guys at all?
No, I think he came in probably after me. He was only still young, but I'd heard a lot about him from youth teams and stuff like that. So he always knew, I think, that he was going to get it through.
And so, obviously, big Liverpool comes knocking.
Tough to
turn down, though, isn't it?
It was difficult. I mean, I had a conversation with Alex McLeish, and he started to give me a bit of loyalty shout of, you know, the club bought you injured and this and this, and you should say. And I said, well, the manager who bought me is not here anymore, so there's no loyalty in football. I said, listen, it's Liverpool. I'm never going to get another chance. I'm 27. It's probably my last chance to get a so-called big move to a big club. And in the end, I think he understood, and he said, right, okay, as long as I can get another player in as quick as you leave the door, then I'll let this happen. And I think he was down the line of signing Charles Nzogbia, which was nearly done. And he said, once that is all agreed, you can go. And it was, you know, I left not on bad terms. Obviously, the Villa fans weren't happy because I had to put a transfer in to go. You know how it works. And I didn't really want to do that, but I had to go. And they probably don't like me for that. But it was Liverpool, like you said, and I was desperate to go there.
Kenny Dalglish was the manager.
How
surreal is that? I mean, you know, you see him on TV, you watch, you know, you know of him as a player, and then how he managed Liverpool, is an absolute legend at the club. It was a bit surreal turning up at Liverpool and seeing Kenny Dalglish. And
well, my dad was a big Liverpool fan, like years ago. Well, let's say fan, he used to love watching because they were the team in the 70s and 80s, and he said to me, Kenny was an unbelievable player, and you know, so when he was signing, it was a bit surreal. It was a bit like, this is unbelievable. Like, and he rang me a couple of times, couldn't understand half the words he said, but it seemed to go all right. I think the conversation was very hard to understand, but he was a great fella, unbelievable guy to play for. You know,
I heard he couldn't understand you either.
Well, that's
so that went well,
That worked well. It seemed to work, but he probably thought, what is he on about? And I couldn't understand.
So did your dad get a chance to meet him?
Yeah, we met him, we signed, we went there, did the medical. Even after games, he'd come in the lounge and that. He was very approachable. He wasn't, you know, everyone thought, oh, Kenny, you know, everyone was a bit in awe of him, but he was so laid back and, you know, he wasn't above himself. You know, he was quite, you know, like good, respectful. And he'd always say hello to the families and ask how you were and stuff like that. Great fella to play for. I mean, amazing, really. But, yeah, it was difficult because, like you say, he got sacked after 1 year, which I thought was a bit harsh, to be honest.
Brendan Rodgers came in as well. So what was that like? How did you find working with Brendan Rodgers?
I thought he was an amazing coach. I have to say, stuff we learned from him was unbelievable. We had a bit of a rocky patch at the start. Me and him sort of didn't see eye to eye, and I sensed that he wanted his own players in. He was trying to probably get us out the building, but doing it not in the right way. I didn't think he was hammering us in the press and stuff like that. And, you know, we got to fight hard and this and this. And I didn't really need that because I was already under pressure anyway, being a big sign. And we'd sort of said the first season we'd sort of failed because Kenny lost his job. And, you know, I had a few words of him that I wasn't happy the way he did things like that, man management wise. But I think we gradually, you know, got on. I was back in the team. I was playing. And I enjoyed playing for him. But, just at the start, really, we had a bit of a rocky patch. But he was an amazing coach, I have to say.
Because it was a bit of a tough time for you at Liverpool, wasn't it? Like, it was kind of like the fans, the management, change management. Yeah, it was a tough experience for you there. So, so the move. I mean, well, okay. So go back to Liverpool right now. They were always set up to do what they're doing now, were they? Or did you get that feeling at the club?
Yeah, when the Americans took over, they were on a mission. Basically, they wanted to win the league. It was all the money they invested. Like you said, Kenny spent over $100 million and that season we finished seventh, I think, which for them was a disaster, and they wanted to make a change. And you could just see the backing they had, and I think they even had like people like LeBron James and stuff on their on the board and stuff like that. You could see he was going places, and they weren't going to hang around. So if they didn't get what they wanted, they would change manager, they'd change players. And you've seen the spending. Brendan spent quite a bit, didn't he? And Jurgen spent a hell of a lot of money as well on good players, I have to say. So they're getting what they want really now, yeah.
And they've also got improved facilities as well. What were your Melwood memories back in the day?
Melwood was dated before I got there, the lads said, and then they spent a couple of million quid on it doing it up, which was good. But it was right in the middle of like a council estate, and it was like weird. And he's turned up, and all the kids are on the fence, and amazing really. But I sensed that as well, that they always wanted to go on a bigger scale of training ground, and that was all. I think that was in the plans, you know, 8-9 years ago before they've got it built. And I don't know if you've ever been to the academy one, which I think they're at now. That was always better than the first team one. But I think the first team were in that one when Gerard Houllier was in, and they moved to Melwood, back to Melwood. But I mean, it's amazing, the new training ground. It's literally got everything, hasn't it? It's unbelievable. But I like Melwood. It was good. It was only little and stuff, but I think the memories, and like you said, we're all good there.
So you talk about Brendan Rodgers being a really, really good coach. So you're not surprised Leicester are doing as well as they are and playing as good a football as... I mean, he's changed Leicester's way of football as well. I mean, they're more ball playing, more possession. That's no surprise to you, is it?
No, he was always possession-based. I think a lot of his ideas were from the Barcelona, Ajax ways of playing. He said he'd done a lot of studying in Spain, and how he liked all the technical football, really, and he could take the ball, and Coutinho's, these type of players, he loved all them. And the way he set his team up, you know, he was people say he's arrogant, but he's very, very confident in how he works. And, you know, and he gives his players confidence to try to play that way. And, you know, and he's not afraid to go and play the big teams away, Man City's and Man United, isn't, he won't go to defend. He'll say, no, we go to win. This works. This is the way I play. All high intensity pressing, and like you said, he likes players who can handle the ball as well. So I enjoyed, I thought his coaching was really good, and to be fair, it started to click the back end of my last season there, and you could see that he was going to go places with the team.
See, for some reason, after you left Middlesbrough, it was kind of like a 2 year period each time at each club.
Yeah,
it was almost like your period, right? Okay, next one, West Ham. Big Sam Allardyce came in for you.
Yeah,
how did that come about?
Well, I was back in the team at Liverpool, and Brendan basically had a conversation with me and said, I'm bringing players in. I think Iago, Aspas and people like that, if you remember him, you're going to have to fight for your players, and you might not play as many games as you think you're going to play. And it was literally, you're not going to play, I think.
Yeah.
I think once he got them in the team, he wasn't going to put me in. But I should have stayed maybe another year and fought when I look back. But then I can't take away what I did at West Ham because it was an unbelievable club. I had a great time. And Big Sam said, come, give me a chance to speak to you and to come down. Because I said to him, I wanted to stay at Liverpool and fight for my players. And I'd work hard to get here. I don't want to just give that up. But I was 29 at the time, I think. 29, maybe 30. And I thought, I need to play. And I could sense I wasn't going to. Once he got me out of the team, he wouldn't put me back in. So I made a decision to go.
So, like you said, you really enjoyed it. You enjoyed working under Sam. So, because like, obviously all the talk about Sam, that style of football, long ball, and it's defensive. Did you actually enjoy playing with him?
I didn't see all that. I mean, I never even say kick it long to me. He used to say, just find the ball and excite me. He was like that. And don't get me wrong, he didn't want any messing about with the back. He said, we haven't got players to pass out from the back. We had solid defenders. He seemed to think, and he just said, if it has to go, it has to go. And there was no ifs or buts there. He just wanted away from the goal. But in midfield and up front, he wanted to see crosses, shots, and flair play. He enjoyed all that. And like I said, the players he brought in, proved that he liked flair players like Alex Song and people like that were good footballers. And then he brought me and Jarvis on the wings to cross. And he always liked a big target man, but we struggled a bit because Andy Carroll wasn't fit for a long period. So we brought in Jaffa Sacco and people like that, and really exciting players. And he got a good team there. He left a really good team, I think, at West Ham. And I love playing for him. He was probably the best man manager I've ever had, I think.
So it gives West Brom hope of staying in the Premier League, you think?
Yeah. I know that disappointing yesterday. He'll be fuming about the sending off. I can imagine being fuming about that. But he'll definitely get them organised. He'll definitely give them a fighter's chance. And like I say, he's a really good man manager, and he gives confidence to his players. And I think the best chance they have is him in charge, I think.
So, like I said, go back to it. 2 years at West Ham. Your time's up. And
yeah.
I remember when it happened, right? So I'm sitting there, and I've told you this before, right? My son raves about you all the time. You're the best player in the world to him. He manages all these teams on Football Manager, plays FIFA, always brings you in, right? And I think not long ago, one of the FIFA managers, you were retiring, and he offered you this ridiculous contract, and you still refused it because you said you're retiring. He's like devastated, right?
Right.
And I'm trying to smack him out of it, and he's just not having it. And he knows I'm talking to you today, so like he's like in awe of it. And I remember the time when you left West Ham to go back to Middlesbrough. And you're in the Premier League, you're doing well, you're obviously enjoying your football.
Yeah.
And you're still young enough, you're still good enough to play another couple of years at the very least in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I know it's Middlesbrough, but why? Just give me another reason. Give me another reason for it.
I think my heart is through my head. I think I look back and I don't like saying it was a mistake because I don't like to look back on things and have regrets because, like I said, I made a choice to go back. But to leave the Premier League to go to the Championship was wrong on my part. I just got back in an England squad, I think, 6 months before. And I still don't know this day. People ask me all the time when I'm out and about, what were you doing? What are you thinking there? And I think my heart just ruined my head, really. We had a young family, and I'm thinking, do I go back home and get settled? But I was having a great time in London, new experience. Imagine a borough lad in the bright lights.
Of course.
I loved it, and wife loved it. And we had a newborn baby then, and honestly, I can't tell you why, but I think my heart ruined my head, and it was the wrong decision, really, I think.
It's the Palmer, wasn't it? The Palmos.
That probably had played a big part as well, yeah. I honestly, I got more sophisticated when I went to London. I started eating a bit more posher food and stuff.
You started looking after yourself? No way. Come on, don't tell. Come on, be truthful here. Come on.
I did. I got the old Palmer when I used to come on, but...
Yeah, so back to Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And that's part of the issue, isn't it? Like, being a local lad,
yeah,
having such a strong connection with the community. Yeah. Obviously, the owner of the club, Steve Gibson, you have a very good relationship with him. It makes it difficult, doesn't it? It makes it difficult to say no.
Yeah. And he rang me and it wasn't even like the contract. Now, obviously, I was getting a longer deal, like 4 or 5 years, which gave me security. But it wasn't about that. I think I left on a relegation and I wanted to go back and get promoted to sort of, well, I've done that now. I've ticked it and I've helped the club. And that was part of my reason as well. But, you know, and he had a really good team. He was going to spend a bit of money on the team. And it just excited me a bit. And I'll be honest, I was absolutely gutted when Sam left West Ham. And I couldn't get my head around it. Like, you know, playing for Bilic, we didn't strike it off, you know, on a good foot at the start. Not that we fell out. I didn't get that warmth from him like I did with Sam. And, you know, I'd gone from that to that, really. And I just thought, you know, maybe it's time for a change and I'll maybe go home. But looking back, if Big Sam was in charge of West Ham, it wouldn't have been a conversation. I wouldn't have entertained going back to Middlesbrough because I was having such a good time playing for him that it would have been wrong for me to leave. But I just sensed a bit of, I don't know what really is going on with Bilic and stuff at West Ham. And I thought, well, let's go back home and try and get promoted.
Was it the same club you went back to, do you think? Was it, you know, no. It's always like, you know, the idea of going back to your old school and going, oh, that wasn't there. Yeah. You know, this. What was that like?
Yeah, I think I went back thinking this is going to be what it was like the first time, but different league, total different players, and I don't know why I even thought it was going to be the same, because it was no one here. Like I said, it was a lot of big Spanish connection. It felt like a bit like a foreign club, if you know what I mean. The way that he ran it, and not that it was wrong, it just felt a bit. You know, we were a bit of a family club the first time around. Swarty will tell you, we're all good lads. We all got on, and I just sensed it was a bit different, and I didn't particularly enjoy it, I'll be honest.
Can you talk about the moment? There was a particular moment, wasn't there, during the season?
Which one?
The next season, really. So you missed out on promotion that season, and then the very next season you got promoted. And there was a moment in that season where Karanka left the club.
Right.
And there was a moment, I suppose, as a team, you could have probably cemented that departure by going away and winning at Charlton.
Yeah.
But you guys were, it was one of your worst performances, wasn't it, as a team away at Charlton. What happened? How did that even happen? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I can talk about it. I mean, we played on the Tuesday night, if I'm right, and he sort of lost his head a bit, and he'd had a go. He come in the change room at Rotherham away. I'd been on the bench. He come in, he started shouting and this and this, and I'm sat there. And as he walks out, he comes back in and says, "What did you say?" Some of the lads and Clayton slammed his boot on the floor. And I still got my boot on. He comes in, he said, "You have no respect for me, slamming your boot on the floor, this and this." And I'm gone, "What are you talking about? I've still got my boot on." But looking back at that now, the coaches and Aggers and people said to me, he was looking for a fight, really. He wanted confrontation, and he got it. And I just said to him, "Listen, like, well, I'd lost my head, I'd had a bad time." And that was it. And then he called a meeting on the Thursday, and he sat us in the circle. Remember the meeting room reception at the Rockcliffe, and and apparently he was going to go through all the players and just tell them how much they pissed him off and what we're doing wrong. He was going to go right through the full team. And one of the players, well, I can't name it because I don't get in trouble, said to him, "Well, why don't you just tell them direct instead of reading out your book? Just tell them who's pissing you off and let's get out in the open now." And he's had a go at this player. The players had to go back, and he stormed out, basically. I never said a word and just sat there, just thought, well, I've had my piece of him, that's it. But this was happening regularly over weeks. He was falling out of players and staff and et cetera, et cetera. And it was just a big build-up, and they could see it coming, and he left. And that was it. And then the chairman rang me on the night and asked, you know, what had happened. I told him, and he said, obviously, other players have said that, staff. And he said, well, I think, you know, that's it. I don't think he's coming back. And he said, I have to make a change. Aggers is in charge. And then, so for me, he was gone. We went to the game on Charlton, and all these rooms were coming out that he fell out with me, he fell out with Albert Adorn, I think, but nothing of the sort, really. And I always talk about this because people ask me everywhere I go, even now, what happened with Karanka? It was nothing. You know, I didn't fall out with him more times than anyone else. And then we lost the game. Like you said, it was a really cool game. It was shocking in the game. And you could just, the atmosphere, the crowd were booing us, shouting Karanka's name. And then, you know, come the Monday, you know, the lads, we got a text, we were supposed to be off, we got a text, you have to come in, Karanka's coming back. And I thought, well, that's a bit strange because chairman's told me he's not coming back and the players think he's not coming back and he's come in the building. And like I say, he said, well, he didn't say sorry or nothing. Didn't apologise. And I thought he should have because he walked out on us. And then from then on, I knew that was the end for me. That was it. I knew that he held grudges. He didn't like, I fell out of him when I said to him, and from then on it was a battle really. So yeah, I had another year of him where he had to put up with what he was doing and sulking, and yeah, I didn't have a great time, I'll be honest.
Yeah, and obviously led to relegation as well. So you got the promotion into the league, yeah. And then you got relegated that very next season. So it was kind of one of those ones. You kind of ticked the box of coming back to the club, helping them back in the Premier League,
yeah.
Given little opportunity to try and help the side stay in there. Yeah. That's a tough one. And in the end, there was a couple of changes of management. Gary Monk, yeah. was one that wasn't probably your most favourite one either.
Yeah. No, I just found it strange. What, I mean, he pulled me in for a meeting at the start of the season. He put off a whole day. I came back. He said, can I come and speak to you? I met a few of the other players and I've given them my thoughts. Can I speak to you? So I thought, no problem. Jumped on a plane thinking he just wants an experienced player's opinion. Maybe, I don't know. Didn't see it coming and just said how, you know, good a career I had. He'd love watching me play when I played against him. Give me all this feel. And right at the end, he just said, but I play a certain way. Football, sort of a bit like Brendan Rodgers' style, really. And he's like, you know, and I don't see you fitting into that. I need dynamic players. So I just said, well, can you explain what a dynamic player is? Still don't know. Is that fast? Is it what is it? And he said, well, you know, quick. I'm not saying you're not quick, but you know, these type of players, wingers on the inside, and like Martin Braithwaite, he brought in and Fletcher and people like that. I said, right, okay, so we've got a problem. And he said, yeah, well, yeah. He said, you won't play it every week, and if you want to leave and get a change, then that's up to you. So I said, right, well, I need to play, and I've had a bit of a nightmare, so I'm going to leave. So I went to train with the 23s, but everyone think he put me there, but it was my decision to keep out of the way. And I was going to Birmingham, really. It was 90% done with Harry Redknapp. And right at the end, some conversations weren't right, and Harry was telling me things about the club with different things. And I sensed that he wasn't going to be there very long, Harry, which he proved because he got sacked, didn't he?
That could have been from one disaster to another.
Which would have been horrendous, really. So I said to Harry, listen, I'm not leaving. My wife's pregnant. 8 months, I can't do it. I'm not doing that. Listen, I'll stay and fight for my place. And Gary Monk was like, right, fine, no problem, you can stay. But sort of put me to the side a bit the first couple of months. And then from nowhere, he put me in the squad, put me on in one game, played me the next game, rest is history, and he played me every week. I couldn't get my head around why he put me to the side and then all of a sudden wanted to play me every week. I don't know if he tried to make a stance of what had gone on, because I asked him, was it because of Karanka's situation? He said no, but I sense he wanted to make a statement and get the experienced lads out, and maybe the lads who had fallouts with Karanka. But I got on with him okay, to be honest. After that, we got on fine, and I was quite sad to see him go when he got sacked, because we were starting to enjoy the way he was playing and we started to click a bit, and we came from nowhere that he got sacked.
Tony Pulis came in, you had a good relationship with him as well, but in the end, yeah. You leave the club, yeah. was it a hard one? I mean it's kind of like you get to the point where you're getting towards your twilight part of your career. Was it sad to leave the club again, or was it just kind of like you kind of accepted it?
Yeah, the writing was on the wall. I mean, I don't know if you remember, Tony Pulis tried to get me a new deal. I think it was like a 1-year, 2-year deal in with the coaching. He see me, I don't know if he was going to be there long term or not, but maybe part of his staff in the long, put me in the academy, and I said, well, yeah, that's perfect for me. 2-year deal in the academy, I'll take that all day long. This goes on for 6 months, but I had a clause in my contract, if I played 23 games, half the games I get another year extension, and I got 22 games, and we were playing on New Year's Day, if I'm right. And Pulis pulls me in with Jonathan, obviously he was my brother-in-law, and he didn't even know, because he said, I would have told you earlier. And they've had a phone call on the morning from Steve Gibson to say, Stuart can't play anymore. He can't start. He's not getting that new deal. So I said, right, well, you've left it right until the last game to do this. You've known for 6 months. Like, why didn't you tell me? And he was like, I'm really, really sorry. And he was embarrassed, really, Pulis, because I was playing every week. I was an important player for him. And he said to me, you can't start, but if any chance, I'll put you on. And he was putting me on after 20 minutes in some games in the first half, and it was embarrassing, really. And it got to a point where there was about 10 games to go, and Pulis said to me, if you sign this waiver, the club will offer you something, I think, in the summer. And Steve Gibson literally promised me, he had a meeting at the training, and said, if you sign this waiver to play the last 8 games to try and get us promoted, I'll offer you something in the summer, a reduced contract. And I said, right, fine, no problem. We shook hands. I went away and said, right, I'll sign the waiver. Signed the waiver, played in the last 8 games. And then Neil Bowser rang me on all day and said, oh, you're free to speak to the clubs, you can leave.
No way.
And I just thought, that left a bit of taste in me. I was thinking a local lad, I played over 400 games, like you said, come back and got the promotion, and I just got bang. And then my dad spoke to chairman and didn't end well. To be honest, it was probably a naughty conversation. And my dad said, I've given him everything.
Wow.
And then there was a massive fallout, and I've not spoken to him since. So it was sad.
How is it even possible? It doesn't make any sense, does it? Like,
no.
That is just like, I didn't even know that. That's just astounding.
Unbelievable. And I thought I'd helped him. I'd signed a waiver. I was going to take a reduced contract. I was home. I was settled, and I just went bang to the side.
Have you been back to the club since?
I played against them on, I think when Jonathan was at the job, and I went to Blackburn. Yeah, I've been back once.
And what was your reception like?
I got an amazing reception. I got clapped for the game, and then I came off about 10 minutes to go. And I got like literally a standing ovation, but I was thinking, well, why didn't they do that when I was there? Because I was getting booed the last season.
At least you got that. See, I got booed when I left, and I got booed when I came back. Booed all the time. So I didn't even get any of that. So, and I didn't have that experience that you were promised and handshook and everything else. I had a different experience. I had an experience where, like I said to you, my son's a big fan. He's actually a Middlesbrough fan because he grew up supporting Middlesbrough, born in Harrogate, and he wanted to go to the playoff final when you played against Norwich. I arranged through my agent to get tickets from the club, which I said to him, I want to pay for them. I don't want free tickets or anything like that. Yeah. And they went, yeah, absolutely. So I got tickets right behind the goal, and they sent the tickets to me. And it was literally 10 days before I sorted it all out. I didn't receive the tickets, and it was like a Friday night. The game was on the Sunday, and I received the thing in the post saying there was postage due on something. Right. And I was just like, what is this? Like, I don't even know. Normally when that happens to me, it comes from Australia or something like that. So I was still playing at the time. I think I was going away for a game I think it was at Leicester. And I said to my wife, could you go down to the post office and see what this is? So she went, and it was the tickets. So the club had sent them to me, special delivery.
Yeah.
I didn't pay for the special delivery. It was like £7 or £8. And I was just gobsmacked because I was like, I'm willing to pay. Why don't you just say to me, we can't pay for the delivery, so it's going to cost you additional. They didn't. They just sent it.
Yeah.
They expected me to pay at the other end without even saying it. I just blew me. It blew me away. No, on top of everything else.
But it don't surprise me. This is what I mean. It wasn't the same club when I went back. I don't know. The first spell, and maybe you've seen differently because you were an experienced player, and I was only a young kid, and I was just maybe away with the fairies, but I sensed a good family club. It was all together, wasn't it? We always got looked after as players and player liaison and stuff. Even the second time we went back, there was no like sort of player liaison. It was like Wendy still the receptionist doing lots of stuff with the other girls, and I just didn't sense that family thing. I don't know. Maybe it was the way the Spanish work, Carranca. I don't know. It was a little bit, even stuff like, he moved all his offices from downstairs all the way upstairs to near the canteen out the way.
That's right. I remember in the back corner. Yeah. Because I went in there. I went and saw him.
Yeah. I just sensed like stuff like that was a bit disconnected from the academy and stuff like that. Whereas we've always been as one, haven't we? And just little things like that. But that doesn't surprise me, that story you just told me, to be honest.
Yeah. I was blown away by it. And still, it leaves, unfortunately, you were there, was it 12 years?
Yeah.
Two periods. I was there 12 and a half years, and you've got a bad taste in your mouth, and you shouldn't. You actually should be looking back at it really fondly and want to go back to the club, want to embrace it. But I find it difficult because of it.
No, I get that. I mean, I'm not hurt by it, but...
You've got to be hurt. You've got to be hurt by it. You can't say you're not hurt by it because that is really poor. That's like disrespectful. That is a slap in the face. That's actually taking your honesty and your loyalty to the club and as a fan and actually taking the piss out of you.
Yeah, literally, I'll take that back. I mean, I was disappointed. I was angry for a while, but it didn't surprise me. And I should have seen it coming. Like, where I thought they were going to ring me back up in the summer and go, oh, there's another one-year deal. Brilliant, you're local lad, you stay. Because they don't work like that. And how I didn't see it coming is unbelievable, because I've seen the stories over the years, like yourself, when you left, Big Vadook's left on bad, everyone leaves on similar, looks like bad terms.
Yeah.
Why can't you thank Mark for your service? You've been here 12 years, it's been great. Anything you ever want from the club, give us a ring.
I got a letter 3 months after I left from Steve Gibson, which was a typed out letter, and he obviously got his secretary to type it out, and he's just signed the bottom of it. Gareth did actually write me a handwritten letter.
Yeah.
Because he was obviously the manager at the time. But yeah, just little things like that, you know, not even a phone call, just to say, listen, so whatever. They not even have to say, sorry, we didn't agree anything. That's not a problem. You know, no. You move on. But just, yeah, it was really, really poor. Really disappointed with it. But anyway, life is.
Yeah,
so Blackburn, you're at the twilight of your career, as they always say, when you get to this stage. Enjoying your football still? You must be. At your age, still playing, involved?
No, yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, it was what I needed, really. I went to speak to Tony. I don't know if you've ever met him, but, you know, great fella. Big Borough fan like us. He's a big Borough lad, and he's just good, you know what I mean? He's just a good fella. He's good to play for. He's great with me. Like I say, he looks after me, training-wise, and games, and he's brought me onto this coaching side of it as well, which he's helped me with that, and he'll do anything for you, really. So I've had a really good 2 years there. I mean, at one point, it didn't look like I was going to go back because of the COVID, and they were a bit tight on money on contracts, and I'd agreed another 1 year, but then he got pulled, and you know, he wasn't happy with that because he said it that was not similar to what we're on about now. He said that's not the right thing to do, and it doesn't sit well with me that this has happened. And to be fair, I was sat alone for 3 or 4 months thinking, you know, that's the end now. I think it's gone too late. But he kept ringing me saying, no, wait, I'm fighting. I think they'll give us some money. And we got a few injuries, a few COVID problems. And then he rang me and said, listen, they're going to do it. We'll bring you back for another season. So fair play to him, really. He could have just given up on me, really. Because I'm nearly 37. He could have just cracked on. But he kept fighting to get me back in. So I'm quite pleased about it.
And obviously the ambition is clearly there. I want to go into coaching. You're involved with the 23s as well in coaching capacity.
Yeah, I'm doing badges. I think it's something I think I'd like to try. A lot of players just say, you know, they want to go out and just do something different in their life. And I get that. But I think, you know, it'll always burn away at me. You know, what if? And even if I go into it and enjoy it, I'll carry on. If I go into it and think maybe not, it's not for me and it's a bit different than what I thought, then, you know, I'll walk away and do something else. But I think it's something I like to do. I like to help people. I try to give advice to the young players, and I quite enjoy that. And you know, as long as I'm enjoying it, I think, and giving some of it back, that's helping. I think I'll give it a go, yeah.
Mate, it'd be a proper Middlesbrough connection and coaching staff there. You've got, obviously, Woody, you got Mozza, Robbie Stockdale, Ben Roberts, goalkeeping coach. Yeah. Mate, you could have a complete Middlesbrough setup there.
The dream team. Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, I spoke to Mozza a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he's been promoted, hasn't he, to West Brom first team. Quality right. For him. He was the same. I think he just wanted to dip his toes in and see what it was like. And he said, it's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed it. Because he had a bit of a bad time. He had to retire, didn't he, quite a few hours early. But then I speak to Dabba, my mate, Andrew Davis, you remember him?
Yep, of course.
Still mad as a box of beans, or he's mental. And he's totally gone away from football. He's doing like energy drinks and stuff like that. And
okay.
The ketone stuff. And he's totally gone the other way. And he said coaching wasn't for me, which is fair enough. But it's crazy how you just see them all doing different things.
Of course.
And how they move on in with their life. But still speak to all of them. They're all good lads.
Finally, ultimately, playing football, making it professional football, but the pinnacle has to be playing for your country, right?
Yeah, it was amazing. Made some amazing memories. Like I said, World Cup and the European Championship, them tournaments were unbelievable. The atmospheres, just the travelling around the world. And you see the world, don't you? It's something that you wouldn't really do if you didn't get picked for your country. And amazing memories. I would just wish we'd have won something, especially 2006, I think. From 2004 to 2007-8, we had, you know, some of the best players in the world, really. You know, Gerrard, your Lampards, and Rooney, and Michael Owen, and all these. And how we didn't win something was unbelievable, really. But we just needed that bit of luck. We had sending offs. Rooney was in 06. I think we'd have went on to win it. Injury in 04 with Rooney when he broke his foot. You remember in Portugal when he was first on the scene? You need that little bit of luck, but you know, don't have any regrets. It was an unbelievable time, really.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for your time, and wish you all the very best in your coaching capacity in the future. And obviously, hopefully, you get a few more games between now and the end of the season and bang a few more crosses in with that left foot of yours.
I might be giving you a ring. I might need a goalkeeping coach.
I think my hamstrings are a bit tight, mate. I don't know if I can.
Or a drinking partner, a red wine drinking partner. I'll
exactly.
Now that we can help with. Yeah. That
absolutely.
We can help with.
Won't be long. Back to Ollie and Mark in just 15 seconds. If you enjoy Two Sharp Reds, though, make sure you search Gegenpod wherever you get your podcasts. David Wiener is joined by thousands of games of experience both on and off the field. It's a great listen. Gegenpod. The Gegenpod. Okay. Back to Two Sharp Reds.
Halftime drinks here on the Two Sharp Reds. That was a great chat, Mark, but it was a great opportunity for me to just sit back and have a sip of this Barolo. It was perfect.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, mate. Stewie's a good lad, young kid coming through at Middlesbrough when I was there. Always like, you know, good pro, right out of instrumental in very important periods of time in the club's history. And just great to hear his stories and his experiences and unfortunate experience of when he left the club, which I'm surprised. I actually am surprised, even though I've had some slightly disappointing experiences when I left the club. I just didn't think Stewie would have the same. That was, or even worse, far worse by comparison.
Well, in fairness, with what happened with you, it could have been, you know, let's say, you know, hypothetically, it could have just been an administration error, you know, a bit of a, it might not be, but, you know, but then to be promised something, you know, from the club, that's, yeah
well,
pretty
even,
disappointing.
Even, you know, handshake agreement, and then the chairman not even actually calling him himself to say, listen, this is the circumstances. I know I did agree that and I did promise you, but unfortunately, whatever, for whatever reason, you know, and that, that is really disappointing to hear.
Should we cut this bit out so your son Julian doesn't hear it? Because we really, I don't want him to feel.
No. He knows, mate. He knows how the football world operates. Okay. It still won't change his love for the club, you know, and the players. Yeah. And that's just the way it is.
Mark, just want to cover off a couple of things before we finish off our wines and depart for Christmas, which I'm very much looking forward to, even though Christmas is pretty much cancelled in London. But that's okay.
I don't know why we're laughing, but yeah, you're right.
We put on a brave face and continue. It's a frustrating time here in the southeast of England, but it's also a very frustrating time for Matty Ryan. Now, what's going on? Wasn't even on the bench for Brighton. He's missed, what, has it been at least the last three games?
The last two he's been out and not even in the squad.
But to not be in the squad, I mean, it's been the first time in a long time we've not even had an Aussie in the Premier League. I mean, it's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. More importantly, the concerning thing for me, for Matty, is, you know, if he's not in the squad, there may have been a bit of a falling out, whatever it is, and the manager believes he needs to get his head right. That's another thing, you know, and you kind of leave someone out of the squad and it may take a couple of weeks for him to do so, right? Which I don't understand. But when you hear the manager come out and say that realistically, like, you know, it's going to be tough for him, and if he wants to play, he's been a great servant of the club, and, you know, he may look to go elsewhere. I mean, you're opening the door and you're pretty much saying, go and find yourself another club.
Yeah.
And I feel for him, you know, that's... that's really hard to take, you know, when you're in the side, you feel that there have been issues in the team in terms of performances at times, or concede goals. But what he's basically doing is he's singling him out as being a bit of a scapegoat, really. Mm. And he obviously had it him up for a while that he was looking at leaving him out, because he already dropped him at one stage, brought Sanchez in away at Spurs, didn't go quite to plan, and then brought Matty back in again. So, I think the writing was kind of on the wall for him a little bit. And I can imagine, you know, being in that position, he's probably thought, right, I'm going to get back in. I'm going to do well or do best as I possibly can. And there's no reason, in my opinion, to say, well, there's no way to say, well, actually he hasn't performed well, even in the last couple of weeks, to justify taking him out of the team. Mm. So that's clearly a personal thing in terms of maybe style of football, maybe type of goalkeeper, that Graham Potter believes that in Sanchez he's got someone that can offer him more to his team in the way that he wants to play. That's the only way I can see it.
So one thing I would say, though, every time, certainly when I watch Matty Ryan, I might be watching with Socceroos goggles on. You know, I'm aware of that. We love him. So there might be that. But I'm looking at some of the goals prevented data that we've got here. So for Matty Ryan, he has played 990 minutes, which is pretty much, you know, every... well, he's obviously, you know, only missed a couple of games, right? So there's only, you know, a few more players, Lloris's, you know, Edison's of the world that have played sort of every game. But he's conceded 14, and his goals prevented is -5.3, which is the second worst in the league.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, stats are interesting at times because you can, if you clearly go off stats, it can paint a very, very poor picture. But I don't think you can judge just on stats. I think you've got to...
Even for a goalkeeper, though, isn't it? Even for a goalkeeper, though, isn't it? Is the stat not you prevent the goal or you let in the goal?
Yeah, but the question is, how preventable is it for the goalkeeper? So is it a goal that the goalkeeper should have saved, or is it a goal that actually had very little chance of saving, but there was a percentage that you could save it and he didn't? I mean, you've got to see it in real life to be able to judge whether or not they were genuinely preventable or not preventable. You know, that's what I'm saying. I think the stats can be deceiving. I mean, listen, when you're down there on all those stats, it's never great, right? So you're obviously having a tough time. And it's not always, you can't always just pinpoint the goalkeeper and say it's the goalkeeper's fault on all these things. And likewise, when you're keeping clean sheet after clean sheet, it's not just the goalkeeper, it's the defense, it's the guys in front of them, it's the whole other 10 other players on the side. And it's the same when it comes to letting in goals, unless you're letting in really poor goals, unless you're making blatant mistakes that are on your shoulder. And Matty hasn't, I can't remember the last time he made a blatant mistake that's led to a goal. So, you know, when they analyze it, does he sit there and say he should have saved, you know, half the goals, should have saved a quarter of them? I'm not sure. Who knows? But he's clearly got he's made a decision, Graham Potter, that he wants to have a different type of goalkeeper in goal. He said it after the game at Fulham. I saw his interview and he talked about Sanchez, about the ability Sanchez has to kick the ball long and to play out at the back. And he believed that he was very well suited to his side. So that's telling me that the kind of aspects of the game that maybe he feels that Matty's not at the same level. I mean, I'm only going by what he's saying. So that's how I'm reading into it. And that's got to be, you know, it's difficult to take from Matty because, you know, Matty's a good goalkeeper and I am surprised he's out of the side.
So what about from a broader perspective when we think about the Aussies? At its peak in 2005 in the Premier League, we had 13 Australians play over 10 games in a Premier League season.
I think
season.
It was so eight of us who were regulars in the Premier League.
Yeah. So, and now we've got none. We've got a big donut.
You know, you go through cycles. Every country, well, not every country, but the smaller countries in terms of population and even in football nation terms, you go through cycles. And we obviously had a generation of players come through that were very successful and very successful at playing at some of the highest level, the elite levels of football around the world. Whereas we're not at the moment. And part of that also has to do with our inception into Asian football.
Yep.
The ability, the opportunity for players from Australia to go and play in Asia and the progression of playing in Asia compared to Europe, I still believe there's no comparison. So in terms of when I say progression in becoming a better player, to going on to very good level, very high levels, developing as a player and being able to play at the highest level. Playing in Asia is not the highest level. So the highest level is playing in one of the top five leagues in Europe. And so there is generally a pull towards Asia. And I understand why there is, because the money that's being offered to play in those leagues is substantial. And for a lot of guys, it's an opportunity to earn a lot of money very quickly right now, whereas coming to Europe, that may take them 3-4 years, if at all, to make that money.
Yeah.
Because they have to get a foothold in. They have to establish themselves. They have to get a reputation. They have to get games on their belt before they start getting paid vast sums of money. And they still may not get the same amount of money they're getting offered in Asia, even though the level of football they're getting playing in Asia is far inferior.
So I understand
the attraction of an Australian player wanting to go and play in Asia. I understand it. And I've said this all along, for the development of Australian footballers, it's going to be detrimental.
Even though the likes of your Mitch Langrack, he's just, you know, broken the record for most clean sheets in a J-League season, 17.
It's a tremendous accomplishment. And there's no doubt about it. And Mitch is actually probably playing some of his best football in Japan. And Japan's the best league in Asia. How would the Japanese sides go regularly against teams out of the top five leagues in Europe? Yeah. I mean, they do okay. They do reasonably well, maybe, you know. And for some Japanese clubs, they've probably got a higher budget than a lot of European teams, right? So it's hard to compare. We'll never know because I'll never play against teams in Europe on a regular basis. And it's just going to be an opinion of yours or over mine. You believe, say, for an example, you believe the Japanese league is as good as, say, the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Or I believe, you know, that the Dutch league is better than the Japanese league, the J league. So it's all a matter of opinion because we'll never be able to really judge it.
So if the Socceroos had to play tomorrow, is Langerak or Rowan starting then?
If they play tomorrow, I believe that it's hard. If they played right tomorrow, gosh, I think it's a decision that Graham Arnold's national team coach would have to make. And that would be based on, you have to take a few things into consideration. What is Matty Ryan's mental position at the moment? Where is he? Mm-hmm. Where is he? Physically, I don't believe there's an issue because he hasn't been out. He hasn't been not playing for long enough. It's more about what headspace he's in. How is he dealing with his circumstances currently now at his club? And again, it depends on what type of game you're playing for the national team. If it's a friendly, of course, Matty can play. If it's a vital World Cup qualifier, then he's got a big decision to make. Does he go with someone who's in incredible form, who's just broke a record in what I believe is the best league in Asia, as opposed to a player that's just lost his place in this last week in what I believe is the best league in the world? Mm-hmm. That's a big decision. And it comes down to, for me, it comes down to headspace. Where is Matty in his head?
Okay. Where do you think he is
tomorrow?
Where do we think he is? If we had to make a guess,
there's no doubt he will be bruised, and his ego will be really hurting, and he will be really disappointed. And there's no doubt for me that his head will be all over the place. It doesn't mean that if there were a game tomorrow that he would be in that position, because he doesn't have a game tomorrow. But you know, like you'd be mentally already preparing yourself and getting yourself ready, trying to get yourself ready.
Well, Mark. Gravy day, it's coming to an end. I'm just looking outside. The sun's already settling. You know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon here in England.
Slightly later than not
much. It is 3:30, but it feels about 8 o'clock at night. Gravy day. You're not a Paul Kelly fan, or just not familiar with the day itself?
Listen, I really like music, right? But I'm terrible at remembering names of songs, lyrics. Understanding, like listening. I don't really look into it. I don't really listen to the lyrics so much. I just listen more to the music, the rhythm, if I like the sound. So no, I'm not familiar with it.
Right. I have been drinking today, Mark, a Barolo. It is a beautiful wine from the Rome sort of region. Arguably, Italy's most famous red wine, the Barolo, is made from, now, how would I pronounce this bad boy? N-E-B-B-I-O-L-O. Nebbiolo.
Yeah, Nebbiolo. I'll go with that, mate.
Count with the Nebbiolo grape, and is naturally quite pale in colour, distinctive, has a natural partner, acts as a natural partner for red meat, firm and dry with a long savoury finish. As I sort of said at the start, matched really well with roast lamb, a steak, which I'll be having for dinner.
So pretty much everything, yeah?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, exactly.
Standard response when I rattle off what they're actually well suited with.
Oh, yeah, but yours are a bit like that. Yeah, fish. Yeah. Pie. You can. What doesn't it go with? So tonight I will be having a lamb, and I assume it will taste slightly better when I can match it. But for now, it was pretty nice. And you've gone for was the Cloudy Bay, wasn't it?
New Zealand Cloudy Bay, classic. 2018 Pinot Noir. Ooh. Yeah, beautiful. Need a bit of time in the glass or a decanter. New world fruitiness, dose of Burgundy funk, ripe cherries, violets, baking spices, slightly mealy, vanilla oak, and a nose lead to a palate that is plush and ripe, yet lifted by a crunch of acidity.
That sounds like a Paul Kelly song.
I know, almost, yeah. Savory tannins and earthy mineral streaks add complexity, simultaneously approachable and austere.
And this approachable could be drunk red.
Now, but will improve with age.
I mean, what do they mean by an approachable red? I mean, Do you get that sense when you drink it? Is it quite approachable?
I think all Pinot Noirs are very approachable.
Hey, coming out, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like one of those ones that they're just so easy to drink.
Right. Yeah,
so
it's
you don't feel like I'm out of my depth a little bit. I'm a bit hesitant to go over to them. It's easy just to walk up to it and grab a glass of Pinot Noir and drink it because it's
Whereas
so
a Shiraz, I mean,
yeah,
you see a Shiraz at a party, you oof.
Well, yeah, gosh, yeah, you have to be a certain type of character to walk up to a Shiraz and start chatting one up.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot. So now it's time to compare our wine to a player, past or present. Would you like to go first?
I'll let you go first, mate, because you seem like you know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few, as we normally do, it's usually three or four words that really stand out. And in my description there, I've noticed famous, very famous, distinctive. This player is incredibly distinctive. Even if you feel like you've not watched much of him, you know him and you can picture him straight away. He's like what's that game? Guess Who? He's like Guess one who, of them. Yeah. He's like, right, you know, if I have, put me down. He acts as a natural partner in most games that I say. Plays in the midfield, but he's really good. You know, he needs someone to bounce off. So he acts as a natural partner. He's very, very my wine, it's famous, distinctive, acts as a natural partner, very firm and played in Rome, Rajat Nangolan. So I think that's pretty good if you ask me. Now, your Cloudy Bay, go.
All right. So my Cloudy Bay, again, like yourself, there's a few words that stick out. Sure. You've got to really kind of use your ability to translate into a player, particularly me playing with or against, having come across. One of the words is crunch.
Okay.
Crunch of acidity, but more about the word crunch itself. So he's a midfield player, love to go in for those crunching tackles. The wine has, you know, streaks, mineral streaks, adds complexity. This guy had complexity, a complex side to him. It was more to do with his mental state at times. He was always fighting with himself, the pressures of staying fit. He went through a really bad period of being injured all the time. He came to Fulham off the back of that and really needed to try and establish himself as a player that could stay fit for any length of time and get gains under his belt. Real athlete, physically really strong. Like I said, going for those crunching tackles. And he was very complex in the way that he thought about the game and the way he thought about his own situation. So it was always a mental battle and you had to always be on him and say, come on, you'll be great. You'll be good. You're fine. You'll get through this. You're a fantastic player. So he was very approachable, as with this wine, simultaneously approachable and austere. He definitely improved with age because when he came to us, I think he was already 27 and I spent 2-3 years with him and he got better and better as he was there. And that was partly down to the fact that he stayed fit. He was winning that mental complexity battle that he was having in his head. Like I said, he was very approachable and he improved with age. So the player I'm talking about is a guy called Dixon Atuhu, midfield player. We signed him from Sunderland and he ended up partnering Danny Murphy in midfield with Fulham and became a bit of that. He was the guy that, you know, really crunched those tackles, cleaned up midfield, did a lot of the hard yards and gave the ball to Danny Murphy for Danny Murphy to be that creative spark in the side.
But just didn't have a lot of confidence.
No, struggled. Yeah, really struggled with that self-belief.
Looking at his some of the places he's played, didn't know he played for Man City. That's pretty
interesting. That's right. Yeah.
Preston North End, Norwich, Sunderland, Fulham. Oh, so you got, Blackburn, and then off to Greece. There you go. But
and
very approachable.
I think more recently
as well.
He's been playing in Sweden in the second division.
IFK, and I'm not even going to. Rosenholm.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, yeah.
Now you know. It's definitely that. It's Rosenholm. Moving on. Okay, well, good stuff there, Mark. I guess Merry Christmas. Is that what we normally say? Even though technically there's 369 days until Christmas.
I know,
for
isn't
us.
It? Isn't it shite? We're supposed to be actually sitting together having this podcast, doing this podcast, having a glass of wine with obviously from the same bottle.
Yeah.
But due to COVID, it's been impossible. And now the fact that we're in tier four a tier that never existed up until 2 days ago. And Christmas is a day that we're supposed to be spending with family, but it's impossible to do so. And I feel for you. I feel for you stuck in that that apartment of yours.
Luxurious apartment. Just add that.
Sorry?
Just add luxurious to the...
Yeah, luxurious apartment. Yes, that you are... Or condominium.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know you spoke Latin. Yeah. 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 That's how I'm feeling. Yep. Correct. Yeah. And also, obviously, we're in London, but also a big shout out to everyone in the Northern Beaches of Sydney as well. After there was another cluster there, so I'm not really sure as to what Christmas looks like in that part of the world, but I'm sure it will, you know, look a little bit different to some other places in Australia.
Yeah, let's hope that we get through this sooner rather than later. And I wish everyone a very, very Merry Christmas, and yourself, Ollie, and I'm sure we'll be in contact between now and then. And it's been fantastic. So, you know, we've run out of time really again, and it's been great having a chat, great catching up with Stewie Downing, ex-teammate of mine. Good to see that he's still very much involved in football and very much enjoying it still as a player and doing the coaching side of things. And long may it continue, and I'm sure he'll do a good job as a coach. I very much rated him as a player. And at times I thought probably on his journeys outside of Middlesbrough, didn't really get a chance to fulfill that potential quite to the maximum. And listening to him there, you kind of get understanding why various moments coaches changed.
Yeah.
Felt like he needed to move on. Didn't really quite fit into the ideas of the new one, which happens all the time with players. So yeah, very good to catch up with him. Lovely to chat to him. And of course, great to see you again, Ollie. And have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Shipmas. Christmas. Thanks, Mark.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.